3, 2, 1. Hey, welcome back to Mingle, Mate, and Merry podcast. So thankful that you're listening. Again, please make sure that you rate the podcast and share it with your friends. And check out our website. We've got a bunch of different things going on there. And, of course, all of our social media posts. We have a lot on our social media posts that I think actually add a lot of value. We do post the quote.
Yeah, we post the quote.
But I also believe that we post some really good tools and information on there as well.
Yeah, bite-sized things just to have people pause and stop and think. And those little bite-sized things can make a big difference in your relationship.
Yeah, believe it or not, I'll read a chapter or two before I post. You know, I'll try to take the best out of a chapter or two of something I've read.
Right.
And then post it and not just, you know, I know I end with this, so I'm going to pick on myself. Love is a choice, you know.
Right.
Hashtag love is a choice on Instagram. We try to put value into it. So anyway, thank you. I want to throw this out to you. And this is a long article and we won't get into the whole thing. But
okay.
The idea is words of affirmation to tell your partner to help build communication, intimacy, connection, all of those things makes me wonder. Lately, what's some of the best affirmation you've received, not just from your partner, could be anybody, someone you work with, your son, daughter, whatever. What's one or two of the things that you, just thinking back in the last week or two, are like, wow, that, thank you for saying that. That meant a lot.
Someone said in the last couple of weeks, you've really made a difference in my life. And wow, I was very emotional and so appreciative. That's a huge compliment and words of affirmation.
Yeah. What else?
Let's see. Someone told me, you make me feel welcome. That was powerful.
Has anybody told you they make you feel like dancing?
No.
You make me feel like dancing.
Nobody's told me that. My husband, when he refers to things that I'm good at from a maybe career or professional standpoint,
right,
that always really means a ton, because to have him or to have our son believe in me and what I do and what I know, to me, that's the highest compliment.
Yeah, not only that, but people who don't know your husband or your son, they are men of few words.
Right.
And I mean this in a good way, they're critical in assessment. They see things
right.
Most people miss. They don't go by emotion. That was great.
Yeah, you know, right, right.
They really see.
Thoughtful.
Yeah. So when they say that, they've taken everything in, processed it, and it means a lot. Rather than the person, that was awesome. That was awesome. You know,
right.
It wasn't awesome. It
right.
It was good. You know.
Well, yeah. Whenever my husband or my son says, oh, you could do that or you do that, that means the world to me, because they've really thought that through. They don't just say that lightly.
Right.
Just a really funny quick story about that. When our son was in second grade, I was back in graduate school. Or no, I was finishing up my undergrad. I had gone back and was at the UW Madison. And our son had gone to a UW Badger football game and he saw the cheerleaders. And by now I'm back in college and I'm in my 30s. And he comes home from the football game and he goes, Mom, you go to UW, you could be a cheerleader. And to think that my son thought right. his 30-something-year-old mom could be a college cheerleader. So yeah, that was high words of affirmation.
Very nice.
How about you?
You know, I love when my wife compliments me on how hardworking I am or how well I try to provide as a husband.
Right.
That always means a lot. You know, probably about 2 weeks ago now, talking to Dad, he sent me a text and he said, you know, I've always been amazed at how easily you give things away. And he said, I was always nervous in college when you were in college. Because you were always kind of scraping by, but then you'd always tell me stories how I gave this guy money or I gave this person this, that. And I've kind of always been that way. So it's not, it's like bragging about how I'm a guy, because it's just who I am. But
right.
the fact that he noticed it
right.
and said, and he actually said, you know, he goes, it's convicting to me. I need to be more giving because I know that I don't always think first of, hey, what can I give this person or help this person? So it meant a lot. It was very cool to hear him say that.
And yeah.
You know how negative and mean our dad was growing up. So So these are, there's no possible way to get through all 60 of these statements, but they said that these are the most often used words of affirmation to tell your partner to feel connected.
Okay.
So I'm going to go every other five. So we'll go with the first one, the fifth one, et cetera. So the first one is pretty simple. Thank you.
Yes. Just saying thank you.
Huge.
Huge.
Yep. Number five, I believe in you.
Oh, that's big.
Right.
Wow.
So, and what a great song by Saxon, the 80s metal band. Anyway, number 10, I feel like you take such good care of me. That's really good.
Oh, that is powerful. And I need to say that more to my husband because he does take really good care of me.
15, you are so much fun to be with.
Oh.
Yeah.
When's By the way, last time you told your husband or wife you are so much fun to be with?
Right. You know what? I'll post these in our notes for our podcast too. So you can look at all 60 of them. But you know what I like about that one is it's outside of the realm of you performing as a good provider or good, you know, it's just,
right.
You're just someone to hang with and goof off with. And
right.
Which is how most of our dating starts.
Sure.
You know, just like being around that person. Number 20, you're my best friend. And you can kind of fill in the blank there, but just that simple. You're my best friend. Do you think most spouse partners can say that about their...
Oh, that's a good question. I hope so. I hope they can say that their husband or wife is their best friend.
What does John Gottman say? The key, one of the number one keys to a healthy marriage is to remain best friends.
That's right. So, work on your friendship.
Very important. It made me so happy when you... fill in the blank. So...
Yeah. It made me so happy when... Yeah, that's good.
30, I love how genuine you are in regards to...
Whatever.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm trying to figure out how that works out. And
okay, so I could think of an example. It would be absolutely honest for me to say to Mitch, I love how genuine you are in your help to your students. Because he so genuinely is a kind and patient teacher, and he takes a lot of extra time to help students that are struggling.
Right. Yeah, I can see that very much. You know, it's in all of these, like in anything in life, you can see it in a negative light or positive light.
Right.
And I love how you're choosing. You could say, Mitch, you spend way too much time with your students. You give them way too much time of your energy, But to say it in a, you know what? I love the fact that you really pour into them. You care. That's a great way. Yep. 35. I love our life together because.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, I actually say that a lot.
I kind of do too.
The thing is early on, I think you say things like, I love that we're a couple. I love that we're married. I love because of how much you. Just, and it's selfish, though you don't think it is, but just in how much I get out of it.
Right.
But now at almost 58, I just love us. I just love coming home to you and that we know each other and are concerned for each other and we understand each other's interests, you know, things like that. It means a lot. So,
yep.
I do love us. 40 is I trust you.
That's a biggie.
I would not have seen that as a word of affirmation, but it's just interesting. Yeah. Number 45, the way you see the world is beautiful and unique.
Wow. And I think it's important to know how do they see the world and how is it unique before you actually compliment them for it.
I was going to say that... We always have a joke in our family when you use the word unique.
Yeah.
Doesn't always mean it's kind of an opt-out word like they're very unique.
Yes.
Or it was very unique, meaning they were as crazy. They were
Right.
Nuts, but okay. number 50, I love that you did this for me.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Again, also just self-serving the other person. I don't know, I'm saying this the wrong way. Just you are absolutely looking at the best in your partner. So,
well, yeah, it's up there with one of Gottman's rules, talking about, you know, 10 positive statements or 10 positive gestures for every, I'm sorry, I'm turning it around. 20 positive gestures or words.
Don't cheat me. If I get 20, I need 20.
I know. That's a good, that's a good ratio. You know, if you think per week, per month, you know, pick a number for yourself and tell yourself, I'm going to say 5 positive things to my husband this week.
Hmm.
5 ways to affirm him verbally. Make it a goal. It's huge. It makes such a difference because it changes your perspective on your spouse. You're seeing the positive versus the negative.
That, again, is that power of focus, where I think we talked about this in one of our first podcasts. I told the story of how when we rented a car in Florida, we loved the car. And we were convinced that they didn't have these cars in Minnesota because they must not be good in the winter.
Right.
Because, like, we'd never seen them.
Right.
And the whole vacation was a 10-day vacation. And we kept saying, isn't it odd that people in Minnesota don't drive the Acadia? Because it's a great car. And we've been living in Minnesota since 98, 99. And we fly back into Minnesota and we're standing there at the airport and like 25 Acadias drive by in the airport.
That's funny.
But it's what you train your brain to look for.
That's right.
I like this one. Number 55, our family is so lucky to have you because.
That's good.
Hmm.
We all want to feel that way in our family, that they're glad that they have us, that we belong.
And if you really want to see it on someone's countenance, tell your grandchild, because I tell you what, having them with us right now, you can just see those things light them up. So
sweet.
At number 60, I respect you so much.
Big. That's huge.
They have a 61 and a 62. I'll just do 62 because it's the last one. You always make everything better.
Oh, that's powerful.
Yeah. I like that.
And if you don't feel like you can say everything better, you can say you always make fill in the blank better. You always make mealtime better. You always make our weekends better. Or you always make being with our in-laws better. So pick something.
Right. You make a lot of things better.
There you go. Oh, honey, thank you. You make a lot of things better.
Right. Or just, you know, you don't do a lot well, but the one thing you do better, I'm kidding. Don't say it like
that. No, don't say it like that. No, but this, I love this list, Garth. I love, it can sound very simplistic, but I cannot tell you the revolutionary relationship transformation that can happen if you challenge yourself to spend a month and just focus on the positive and speak the positive. There's a guy out there, I'm sorry, I forget his name. He gives out purple bracelets for complaint-free zone, and he challenges people to go a month without complaining about anything.
Ooh.
And every time you fail and you recognize that you've complained, you have to take your purple bracelet off one wrist and put it on the other. And so it's like this mental conditioning. And it's a complaint-free world. Oh my gosh, if we would do that in our marriages, it could revolutionize our relationships.
The job I had as a sophomore in high school at InterVarsity Christian Fellowship, I worked in the printing press. There was a guy there in his 30s. He was technically my boss. He worked over Rob and Todd Stroman, great guys, if you're listening. For a whole week, he walked around with a big, giant bag of M&Ms. And he would randomly just give you an M&M, one M&M. And you'd be like, oh, thanks, you know.
Right.
And at the end of the week, he said, you know, at the end of the week, I'll let you know why I'm giving out M&Ms. So, and you just never could figure out why. You thought you could, but then you couldn't. Like, you'd compliment him, no M&M.
Okay.
You know, you'd be like, okay, what? Or you'd talk about the Wisconsin Badgers or campus, no M&M. And then, and he wouldn't do it just that second. He'd say, hey, I noticed a few minutes ago something, and he'd give you an M&M, and you're like, well, so by the end of the week, we're all, you know, what? Okay, how? Why are we getting these M&Ms? And he goes, I handed out M&Ms every time I heard you complain.
Oh.
Yeah, and then you went back and go, because close to the end of the week, you're going, I've only gotten 14 M&Ms. What do I need to do to get more M&Ms? Because you're thinking it's a positive.
Right.
Ooh. And then when he tells you, then you're like, oh, man, I got 14 M&Ms.
Yeah.
So it's pretty interesting. So, well, let's get into the real reason why we're going to have this podcast today. And that's for today's topic, which is, it's not the only reason, but it is an interesting topic. Understanding your husband's need for sexual intimacy.
Okay, that's a good topic.
Yes. So I'm probably the expert on being the husband here.
Yes,
so,
you are.
Mm-hmm. And I will admit to all of our listeners here, just to be completely straightforward and honest, I like sex.
Okay.
So we're going to jump into
this. No surprise.
No surprise. Though you've probably had this. It's way more common than what I expected when I was counseling early on. How many couples come in and the woman's frustrated because the man doesn't want to have sex. So it's not always that way.
Right.
I have a friend of mine who we've been friends since high school. He's a pastor. And we were talking about his ministry, his health, all these different things. And I asked him, not verbatim, you know, are you having sex with your wife? I was asking him about temptation, things like that. And it came up. He said, yeah. He goes, I'm sure my wife would like us to have more sex. It frustrates her. And I said, well, how much more? And he goes, well, probably more than once a month. And I'm just like, now, again, I don't know everybody's, you know, what is normal to them. Once a month is not normal to me.
Right.
And I was like, wow, okay. But the fact that he admitted, he goes, yeah, I just don't have a sex drive. Never, even when we were married early on at a young age, it wasn't my number one driving thing. And that's foreign to me. But so understanding your husband's need for sexual intimacy, I'll go through these points. We can both comment. Number one, a husband needs his wife to initiate sex. Not all the time. But there are those moments in marriage, in your relationship, where it speaks volumes to him that she initiates sex.
I agree.
Okay.
I agree.
And ladies, if you're listening, again, this isn't to beat you up. This is just simply telling you where a man comes from. Number two, a husband often struggles with feelings of inadequacy or failure. Not in the bedroom. That's not what the article is means.
Right.
You know.
Just in general life.
Yeah, if there's a erectile dysfunction, that's not what it's talking about. It's just talking about how their need for sex, I get choked up when I talk about erectile dysfunction. Their need for sex is a great antidote, or sex is a great antidote for when they're discouraged and when they're feeling down is where they're going.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. Number three, a husband gets discouraged when his wife does not want to have sex or does not express passion for him. So again, I've seen and heard that many times in my office where the husband will say, I feel like I'm an inconvenience, you know,
right,
more than I'm a husband. So,
or she makes me feel like I'm just this pervert that all I can think about is sex. And
did you just say pervert?
Yeah, I said it got weird.
That's the technical clinical way you say it is pervert.
It's because I'm trying to think so carefully before I speak.
You're not just a pervert. You're a pupvert. That's P-U-H-V-E-E-R-T. If our sister was here right now, she would tear us all apart and make fun of us.
She would not let this go by.
Hitting the table and I'd be saying, Renee, quit hitting the table.
Continue.
Yeah, so if you feel like a pervert because you bring up sex, that's your wife needs to understand that that's, you need to be able to bring that up. I always tell my wife, who do you want me to tell? You know, I want to have sex. I'm horny. If I can't tell you, who do you want me to tell?
Right.
And kind of jokingly, because there are millions of women to have sex with. I chose you. And even today, there are plenty of women who would still have sex with men who aren't their husbands.
Right.
But I still choose you. So women need to understand that men need to hear that. They need to know that. They need to, you know, feel wanted to a degree. A husband feels as if he's not important to his wife when she doesn't take time for sex or to make love. A husband becomes concerned when life situations such as depression, grief, loss, job change, things like that interfere with his interest in sex. Interesting that he has a lack of interest in sex and yet it concerns him.
Right, right.
Last one, a husband feels loved when his wife receives him and responds to him sexually. So in your practice, thinking about different couples that you have talked to or walked through issues like this, what are, and there might be medical conditions, different things, but what are the things that you try to address with a couple? And I'll throw women in with this too. If they feel like their spouse isn't interested in them sexually, what are the steps you take? I mean, so we know what it does for a man, but what are the steps you take to help a woman understand you need to start having more sex with your husband?
Well, I always ask them to have, first of all, a discussion with their medical doctor. Is there anything medically, physically that is part of why this is difficult? I take a sexual history to find out if there's been any events that have been harmful, traumatic, difficult, that have become a barrier. I try to take a thorough sexual history for both partners. And then often I try to assess, do they actually know, have they had good sex education? A lot of couples, we see a lot of stuff sexually on TV or in the media, but when it actually comes to good performance and sexual technique, a lot of couples don't have good education about that.
Totally agree. In fact, in my premarital counseling, the very last thing we talk about is sex. And a lot of these couples come to me and they've been sleeping together. So it's not like there's all this anticipation and nervousness, but I'll say, okay, I'm going to talk to you about the best way to stimulate a woman and the best way to stimulate a man, which is kind of a joke. But, and many times men will go, and the woman will go, I never heard that either. What, you know, how do you know this? Well, we have to read.
Right.
It's as much clinical.
Right.
As you might say, erotic, and instruct them and help them understand, oh, okay. And I'm surprised many times when we get to, when we start getting to blows in real counseling, ask, well, how many times does your wife climax in a month or in 6 months? And zero. And you go, okay, well, you can kind of see then from her perspective why this is not top on her list to do.
Right, right.
All it is for her, as a friend of mine said, is cleaning up the garage.
Yeah, right.
You know? You race the car, she gets to clean up the garage. It's not a lot of fun for her. So
yeah, I think the best thing that couples could do for their sexual relationship is get educated, and not through the media. Get some good, solid, reputable resources that you learn about yourself and your spouse sexually. How does the body work? What's the cycle of arousal? What is foreplay mean to them? What is orgasm? What is climax? What is, you know, just the techniques are important, and it's hard to talk about. It can be embarrassing. It can be awkward. It can be helpful to get some good resources and read them together. Or sometimes I recommend for couples, you read it first, you highlight in one color things that resonate, or, you know, that you think, oh, I never knew that. Or, oh yes, this describes, this is how I feel about this. And then give the book to your spouse, let them read through it. They highlight what resonates for them. And then you can talk about what are the parts that were new to you? What did you learn? Because it can be difficult to just out of the blue start bringing up the topic of, let's talk about our sex life. It's still awkward and hard, even though we're bombarded with sexual messages.
Right, right. I think I told you, I don't know, last year sometime, a woman that I'm talking to, and she, you know, she would say, my husband wants to have more sex. I don't. And she said, he just doesn't understand that it's painful. And she's about my age. And I said, oh, I said, well, you know, he needs to understand that there's physical pain and, you know, what's going on. And maybe you should see it. Maybe you could see a doctor. And she said, oh, no, it's only painful because I have to stare at him in the face.
Oh.
So it was funny, but, you know, but it was funny. That's all it was. It was mean, but it was funny.
There, but yeah.
So, okay. But with that, again, many men today. So this book that I'm currently writing, one of the statistics that I cover is that a man's testosterone level is 3 times lower than it was in 1900.
Oh, wow.
And there's a lot of debate and theory as to why, but nonetheless, at the age of 35, most men need to start on TRT, testosterone replacement therapy, because their testosterone is bottomed out. Definitely affects their sex drive, affects their ability to be able to perform, things like that. Something like that is I've seen do dramatic changes in a person's marriage, because the wife feels like, am I not attractive anymore?
Sure.
Do I need to lose weight? You know, I bought lingerie, all these different things. And then all of a sudden a guy goes in and gets a simple shot. And, you know, all of a sudden there's fireworks again, and the woman feels like, okay, I am desirable. I am still attractive. He does still want me. And it really had nothing to do with the husband or the wife. It was just a physiological problem with where he was at.
Yep. You have to take the holistic view of what life stage you're at, what else is going on, what's been your sexual history, what is your body doing physically. And yet, I mean, and then what are the things you don't know? And there's some good resources, reputable resources that are wise, that are sensible, that are easy reads. The best, one of the best things, because people don't even want to come really to therapy and talk about their sex life. It's awkward. They still struggle to even say the words. So get some good, or ask for some good resources, and educate yourself and gently begin to talk about it together. Because every couple's different, every individual and their own sexuality and sex drive is going to have its own unique nuances, and take it on as, I need to study and learn about myself in this way, and I need to learn about my spouse in this way.
Okay. What do you do with a couple that either is because of age or health, where one person can still have sex and the other person can't? And maybe it is pain or something like that. Are there things that you can help walk them through as far as, you know, or maybe just a spouse refuses to have sex anymore?
One of the things is I try to get them to begin to talk openly about, okay, what is your definition of sex? Because if sex is just about penetration and intercourse, you know, that's a very narrow, you know, there's a lot of ways to be sexual with my spouse that doesn't necessarily involve intercourse or penetration. So we talk about that, expanding that definition. What does it mean to be sexual? The other thing too is to get them to be honest about how much sex do they want? How has that changed? You know, recognizing that our sexual selves it's on a continuum and it changes over time. So just normalizing the fact that if they are experiencing some changes and some differences now, that it's not necessarily wrong. It's just, oh, it's different. So let's first communicate about how is it different?
Right. Right. So, and it, you know, what's funny is I'm thinking back to, I don't know, it's probably 2 or 3 years ago, Kim got this idea of, hey, let's try to have sex every day for a month. He's like, I'm game. I was like, okay, I'm game. And I thought, I can do that. I'm still healthy. I work out. I have a healthy sex drive. Day 4, I was like, yeah, I'm just not happening. You know,
I'm tired.
Like, I like to think I'm still 18, but so there are differences there. It's probably too much information. But when you talk about what is sex, there are a lot of things that can connect you to your spouse that I think men have to understand. A lot of times women they don't want to cuddle or fondle or hug because they feel like then you're going to, it's going to lead into sex. And then you're going to want sex.
Right.
And so for men who are listening, you know, it's fair. And I said this early on many times. I just want to hold you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to expect anything.
Right.
Which can be, I know maybe early on, if you're real young, it might be a little tad frustrating. But as you get older, it can be very fulfilling.
Right.
To have contact and connection, and you don't have to have intercourse.
Right.
Can still make for a great, healthy bond without having to take your clothes off, per se.
Right. And I think that as we get older, of course, our bodies change, our sex drive changes usually. And what I try to encourage couples is you don't have to go from sex to absolutely zero. You can say, okay, we maybe don't have intercourse the way we used to, but it doesn't mean we have to stop touching altogether, which is, I think, the point you're making.
Right. Excellent. Okay, we don't have much time left, but I want to jump into something a little unique when we're talking about just couples, relationships, marriage, things like that. And that is, we talked about this last time and different feedback regarding, you know, why you have healthy couples in your life. But there was a recent article that said one of the greatest benefits you can have as a couple is to be in a small group with other couples.
Okay.
And I just want to touch on it real quick and see your thoughts. Number one, it gives accountability when you're around other couples. You can, I remember telling a husband once the way you treat your wife is not right. It's improper. You're a bully. And he literally didn't realize it until I said it. I remember telling one husband, you keep interrupting your kids and your wife, and it's just incredibly, it's to a point of vulgar. It's just beyond rude. So accountability. Number two, provides a place of openness and sharing and safety if you have the right group of people where you can openly talk about your issues and your problems. I would add, if you want to bring something up about your spouse, ask them and ask permission before you get to the small group. Don't look at your husband and say, well, I don't want him to get upset, but I want to talk about his erectile dysfunction or whatever it is, you know.
Right.
Number three, it stretches you out of your comfort zone. Number four, provides friends to walk beside you during tough times. Number six, small group provides mentoring relationships, key. And finally, people to pray with you over your relationship. Thoughts or ideas or comments?
First of all, people need to realize they can define small group in a lot of different ways. And so currently, Mitch and I are not in a church small group or Bible study, but we are in a what we call our supper club. It's a neighborhood small group of two, three other couples that are our age and stage in life. They live right in our neighborhood. We do dinner usually together once a month at least. And that has been a powerful small group because it...
Would this be Mary and Beth and Marge?
No. Would not be those ladies. I just think it's so important that you are walking through life with others that can support you, love you, for all the things you just said.
Right.
For all those, it's
right.
So important. Isolation will be so hard on your marriage. Doing life with other couples in a small group, formally or informally, powerful. In fact, a few months ago, we were with our small group, our supper club, and we all had dinner, and one of the couples, they were really having some difficult things, some scary things physically. And I was so touched, and it was a time where I could really affirm Mitch because this couple was sharing with the rest of us some of these difficult things that were scary. And at the end of the evening, before we all left, we all kind of hug and tell each other goodbye. And Mitch said, let's pray. Let's just pray for any named our friends. And just stuff like that, just knowing we're not alone. Someone
right.
is coming alongside. We feel seen. We feel loved. We feel encouraged.
Yeah, I would say a lot of counseling today could be negated if you just got into some healthy couple relationships.
Absolutely.
And groups. So
my job could be largely obsolete if we have close relationships with other couples. There's a lot that can happen just in friendships.
And maybe the focus should be, for many couples listening, quit trying to solve your problems and work more on connecting with other couples and watch how your problems will kind of take care of themselves.
It'd be a very, very interesting challenge and experiment, because as we connect with others, it tends to, in a healthy way, diminish what we think is so critical in our life and difficult in our life.
All right. Well, we are definitely out of time. Last words.
Sex is important, although it's not everything. So please know. And marriage is hard, but it's really worth it. And married sex can be amazing.
The best sex is in marriage, I guarantee it. And love is a choice. Thanks. We'll see you next time.